everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Oner Podcast, asterisk. It's the only podcast on the internet where we break down and review films all in one big, long take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and lifelong best friend.
Kramer England.
Asterisk.
Asterisk. The new Oner Podcast.
The new. Yeah. Okay, so we are talking about Thunderbolts this week. They did another Marvel.
They did.
They're back with them. I wore a yellow beanie because I couldn't think of what else to wear, and I was like, this movie, the logo was like very yellow.
Yeah.
And I couldn't. Good. Yeah.
I wore. This is kind of. I'm just making it. I'll just say that I meant to do this, but it really didn't. But this is my son's. This is the high school team that they play.
So it's like a little league team.
Yeah, it's Maple Mountain. They're the Golden Eagles, which is that's where they get the name, the Thunderbolts.
Right.
It's from the little league team. And I coached my son's football team. And the first year we didn't win a game, but the second year we won two. So
yeah. Yeah.
I could relate. I was like, oh, but the kids had fun. They loved it. I tried.
Yeah. I have a hard time believing that a soccer team with both Yelena and Natasha Romanoff didn't win any games. Like those girls can kick someone's head in. And I got to imagine that at least those two girls would be good enough to dominate on the soccer. Like, how are you going to be a literal Black Widow and not be able to kick a soccer
ball? Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they were good and nobody else really cared, you know?
But you know, Little League sports goes, all it takes is like one kid to be great.
It really is. It's kind of crazy. If you have one good kid, you can be the best team. And it's crazy.
Most kids suck.
Yeah.
Okay. So this was one of our movies that we talked about on our episode that we did near the beginning of the year, where we did predictions for the year. We were talking about predictions for the biggest films. This was one of them we talked about. My prediction for this film, if I remember correctly, I didn't actually go back and check this time, but I think I said, like, my prediction is that I'm going to like this movie more than most of the other movies in recent Marvel memory.
Yes.
But I don't know if that means that it's going to like save the franchise for me or get me locked back in.
Yeah.
And I think for the most part, I was correct. And I still wound up pleasantly surprised with how much I did enjoy watching Thunderbolts.
Nice.
What about you?
Yeah. I think that was your correction. I watched that today. Or I mean, I think that was your prediction.
Yeah.
And I watched that today. My prediction was that it would be better than Captain America in both critical praise and box office. Now, I'm half right. It's definitely better in critical praise. The box office, we'll see. It did not beat it in its opening weekend.
Right.
It's pretty far off. But it's also, with that good word of mouth, we'll see where it goes. But I don't think it's looking like I was wrong in that prediction. I gotta say,
I'm surprised by that. When I heard that it didn't beat Captain America in the opening weekend, I was like, well, what? Like, is Sinners still pulling that much?
Yeah.
That
Sinners it only dropped like 28%, which is crazy good. Like, it was like 33 million or something. So,
I guess The Accountant 2 is still a pretty big draw. I guess
I think too, it's just that Captain America has the draw of Captain America. Like, he's been in movies. I mean, they've been in some movies too, but I think his draw, I think, was probably bigger. You've got Red Hulk that, you know, it kind of had a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like, even it's crazy. Like, a sequel can be way worse than the first movie, but it usually does better just because it's a sequel and people kind of know what they're getting into. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you look at sequels for the box office, and a lot of times the sequel outperforms the first one, even if it's not as good, you know, general feeling of it, maybe it's not as good, but so I think that this feels almost more like a new, I know everybody's been there, but this is their first movie together. So,
well, and this is kind of a sequel for a lot of characters that come from movies that aren't that great, movies or TV shows that like a lot of the characters here that are being revisited are from movies. Like, nobody really liked Black Widow, and a lot of our characters are from Black Widow. And then, like, Ghost is from the first second Ant-Man movie. And it's sort of like, it's been a long, kind of like, what's his name in Captain America? The Brainiac guy.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that guy.
That actor. It's been so long since the last time we saw him. We're like, oh, yeah, him. Yeah. And then, like, you know, Wyatt Russell is from a TV show that's kind of okay. And so it's like, it's a sequel for a lot of characters that come from properties that were just sort of like, okay, sure, why not? I guess it's you again.
Yeah.
And so I think with the word of mouth being so good, with the reviews being so good, this could pick up in subsequent weekends. It could even maybe grow, who knows?
Yeah.
That's
rare, but it's
So
we're filming this on a Thursday.
Yeah.
So this weekend, because it's the second weekend, it'll be very interesting. If a movie drops 50%, that's pretty average. So if it's less than 50%, I think that's pretty good. And Sinners is one of those. It's crazy how little it's dropping. But I think it will be a good second weekend, because I saw it and I'm telling everybody I really liked it. So
yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. We will get into a plot breakdown. So spoilers, if you have not seen Thunderbolts, go to the movie theater and see Thunderbolts. It's weird to be telling people to go support Marvel. support this little company needs your help. But because I don't know I don't know how I feel about that ethically, because I want to support movie theaters and the movie industry.
Right.
But I don't actually know if I want to continue encouraging this never ending TV show that I still am not fully. I'm not like back in where I'm like, okay, guys, I'm back. What I will say is I enjoyed watching this movie.
Yeah.
And I feel like what worked about this movie in general for me is it felt like what used to work in phases 1 through 3, where every once in a while they would give a director free reign to sort of do something unique with one of the movies, like Taika Waititi with Thor Ragnarok, or like James Gunn with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Where every once in a while a director would get to come in, even the Russos with Captain America Winter Soldier, where there was sort of a stamp on it. You definitely felt Joss Whedon's stamp, for better and or worse. You know, there's the good aspects of Whedon and the less good aspects of Whedon. But that's what this movie felt like, is that they actually let the creative team just focus on making a movie, rather than what it's felt like for a while now is, and I've seen a lot of people talk about this movie in this way, where like every Marvel movie that comes out feels like it has this desperation of like the future of the franchise depends on people liking this movie. And there's this desperation from the studio of like, it's cool again, right? Like, we did it. We're back, right? Marvel's back.
Yeah.
And, I didn't feel that desperation as much while watching Thunderbolts. And I didn't also feel like the studio was pinning the future of the franchise on this. Everything needed to come together in this movie. It felt like the creative team was able to just focus on just telling a good story with interesting characters and good cinematography and well-staged, you know, action sequences, and just focusing on the nuts and bolts of it. And I enjoyed that. Now, I will say that there's a lot to that. That being said, there's a lot to nitpick here, and there's a lot to make fun of. And
There's definitely stuff. I totally agree, though. So I don't know when it was. I mean, when Bob Iger came back on and is running Disney again, you know, they kind of realized, Marvel realized, that we're making too many TV shows and we're not focusing on things enough. And I think this is kind of the first product, because Bob Iger said this is what we want Marvel to be now, right? Like, this is the new one that we want to kind of get back to, kind of like you were talking about, right? It kind of feels a little bit more like the earlier days.
He said this about Thunderbolts, that he wants this to be what Marvel is.
Yeah, kind of like he wants it to be more, and I'd have to find the quote. It was either him or Kevin Feige, but I think it was him. But they, you know, they've said like, we're making too much. We want to focus on, you know, a little bit less, so that we can put more focus on some of these things.
Just this make movie, a good movie. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like this, the thing that I loved about this movie, as which I'm going to compare this a lot to Captain America, Brave New World, because they came out very, you know, in a similar time frame. But this movie, Thunderbolts, felt so much more intentional. Like, this is the movie we want to make. This is how we want it to happen. And that's how it happened. You know, like you the story is very, very cohesive. Like it fits together really, really well. Whereas Brave New World just felt so hodgepodge. Like it felt so kind of soulless.
Well, that's a movie that had to go do a lot of reshoots. And, you know, and again, there's that desperation in that movie where, it, you know, even in the marketing of the film, where it's like, you can't just trust us to show up. You have to show us Red Hulk. And then the whole movie, we're watching a movie that's teasing out something that we already know because you spoiled it in the posters and in the billboards and in the trailers. So like, there's no, like the whole structure of this movie doesn't make sense anymore because it's kind of like, and I'm going to spoil this right now because I think it's integral to how we talk about this film.
Yeah.
It's like if the marketing for Thunderbolts had said Thunderbolts asterisk, and then there had been an asterisk at the bottom of the poster that said the new Avengers. And it'd be like, oh, well, okay, then, you know, then so this is an Avengers movie or the fact that that's sort of, and that is sort of the big, that's what the asterisk, do you say asterisk or asterisk?
Asterisk? I don't know. Now it sounds weird to me.
I don't
know. The asterisk. Asterisk.
Asterisk.
Whatever.
Asterisk. I just looked it up. Asterisk.
There you go.
But that's what it is the new Avengers, which by the way, I'm just spoiler for my opinion. I don't like that. my personal feeling is this is a good Thunderbolts movie. If you're telling me this is the newest Avengers movie, this is not a very good Avengers movie.
Well,
but it's a good Thunderbolts movie.
Right. I think your opinion is valid. I actually think it's funny. I think it's good because it's not they're really not. I mean, in the end, they become the Avengers, but they're really not the Avengers. And like it was a whole ploy, like it just worked out that way. So I almost feel like it's like another joke for the movie. Yeah. And I actually think, oh, that's really funny. Like that's actually pretty clever that it worked out that way. But from an outside perspective, like I have people who haven't seen it and they're like, they're confused. Like, so this is an Avengers movie? Like this seems so. Such a ploy to get people to do it. And I think it's kind of is serving both parties. You know, it is kind of a ploy, but I thought it was funny. Like, I think,
I like that interpretation. I like the interpretation of it as, cause I think that thematically fits that like, it's a joke that like, obviously these are not the Avengers. Like, they're far from it. They are absolutely the B Avengers or even the C Avengers. Like they are like, they are the bottom of the barrel when it comes to who's left in the power dynamic of the MCU. Like we've got Doctor Strange and Spider-Man and Ant-Man and Thor still out there running around. Like this is kind of like a, like if the team was oops, all Hawkeye, you know, it's just kind of like, oh yeah, this is not, you know, the best material that's left in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But if it is a joke to say, they're the Thunderbolts, asterisk, the new Avengers, which is what they're being marketed as, but they're not the Avengers.
Yeah.
I like that. The reason why I sort of bump on it is because I could see it going either way where Marvel's like, surprise, this is the Avengers now. Like that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. We can talk about that when we get to that point in the plot. Yeah. But there are reasons why I'm kind of like,
I think it's totally fine.
Yeah. But I think I like your interpretation of it there.
Yeah.
So, as I said, as we go through this, there are going to be points where I'm going to point out things that bother me and that I don't think are great. But I think overall, in a Marvel movie, you can always do that. You can always point at things that are a little bit lazy or a little bit like a little like plot hole or something that's written in a way that's like, okay, that's just sort of there very conveniently.
Yeah.
That all exists in this movie. I think that the test of a Marvel movie for me is, am I enjoying watching it enough that I'm not actively distracted by that stuff? Am I invested emotionally enough that I'm along for the ride? And I was for the most part watching this movie. I really like where we start. I think it tells a very cohesive beginning, middle, and end story about.
Yes.
And I also really like that this movie took a big swing emotionally and that it tells a story about kind of the emotional well-being and mental health of these characters.
I think that was a huge that's a huge thing that I think really paid off. That they took a subject matter that is important to a lot of people and they treated it really well. I felt like it was, it's ultimately depression or, you know, your mental health, you know, overall. And I like that they had Florence Pugh be the main character. Mm-hmm. And then also having Lewis Pullman, who looks exactly like Tom Holland. I'm sorry. He just looks, sure. He is just like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But whatever. I was very, very surprised with him. I thought he did an awesome job. But having their story kind of be the central part and then everybody else connecting to it, you know, everybody else is going through trauma and is going through hard times emotionally. And I think it all fit really, really well from a structural standpoint. And I think it really paid off. And that's why I really enjoyed it too, is because like you're not just making it about the end of the world. You're making it about the characters specifically. And their personal problems.
Well, and this isn't the first time that the MCU has done this. And I always really like when they do take the time to do this.
Yeah.
They did it in Iron Man 3, where we really explored Tony Stark's PTSD after the Avengers film, where like we see that the effect that it's had on his psyche, you know, witnessing a wormhole open up over New York City and an entire alien army come out of it, and him having to like throw a nuke through the wormhole to, you know, that he realized like, okay, I'm up against things that are a lot bigger than just kind of terrorists. And, you know, I'm up against intergalactic forces and witnessing what that was him having panic attacks and things like that. And then, you know, we do it with Captain America, with Steve Rogers. We talk about the toll that it takes on him emotionally. We talked about that in the Winter Soldier episode. And I like when the MCU has been willing to delve into, you know, how being a person like this with these abilities or with certain powers can be isolating. They've done it some with Thor in some of the later installments of Thor, of kind of exploring what does he want to be beyond, if he's not going to be King of Asgard, who is he? And as many flaws as Love and Thunder might have, I do kind of like the idea of giving him a renewed purpose in being a father at the end of that movie and doing that. That seems like a growth for the character and a new place for him to go and a new area. It gives him a sort of a renewed purpose. But yeah, I like that this movie was, you know, properly about mental health and the mental health of these characters from the very beginning. We open with a shot of Florence Pugh in what is feels like it's alluding visually to a suicide attempt, but we can tell as the audience that that's not what's going on. But her monologue sounds, she's giving some monologue about how humdrum and droll and boring and predictable her life has become, and not knowing what her purpose is. And as she's giving that monologue, she's sitting on the edge of a tall building and she walks off the building.
Yeah.
Obviously we know from, you know, context and reference that like she's probably doing, and she's the main character of the movie. She's not going to die here. She's probably on a mission, but they're definitely giving us a visual.
Yeah. Yeah. Know, they're making that kind of they're making that connection.
Yeah.
But also shout out to Florence Pugh, who really did that. She really she jumped off the, I don't know how far she fell, but she really jumped off of that building. I mean, she was hooked up to wires and everything, and she wasn't the one base jumping, but they had there's a bunch of marketing stuff out there.
More like Florence Cruz.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She is going to take over Tom Cruise's own stunt thing.
She said, "I know Tom Cruise is getting old. Don't worry, y'all. I got this.
I got this.
Check me out."
Yeah.
That's pretty dope that she did that.
Pretty amazing she did it.
And it's a great looking stunt. There's a lot of really cool practical action that looks great in this movie. I do like this opening sequence. I love the overhead hallway shot of
awesome.
Her. Yeah, it's great.
Kicking the crap out of everybody. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the thing. We'll get into this more later, but I really, really enjoy just fight choreography between two people. Like, and it's cool when, you know, when you can add a superpower into it, it's okay. Like Ghost, I thought they worked really well, but we'll get to it. But when the scene, when Sentry comes and he beats everybody up, that was far less interesting to me than every other fight scene.
Sure.
Because of how, like, I just love the hand to hand, like the real physical fighting of people doing things. Like, and you can add things in there. You could do wire work and stuff, but like this fight scene was really cool and it was well choreographed, and it's much more engaging to me when there's less VFX going on.
Well, there are also stakes when people aren't immortal. And people talk about this with Superman and stuff, but it's like, that's why Superman has to go up against other godlike figures, you know.
Yeah,
he's got to go up, he's got to like meet his match a lot of the time, and oftentimes he does, you know. It's got to be gods on gods. It definitely feels like there are more stakes when there's people who will get hurt if they get shot. So she's doing some mission for Julia Louis-Dreyfus. She's the mission doesn't really matter. It's more about her kind of narrating this thing of like, oh yeah, this, I do this, I get the orders, I show up, you say this,
and she kind of wants to get out, and she goes and visits David Harbour.
Yeah,
well, and Julie Louis-Dreyfus is gonna get impeached. That sets her character up, like she's desperate to get rid of everything so that she doesn't get impeached and she doesn't go to jail.
And that's her
motivation.
She has been kind of operating her own sort of shadow version of S.H.I.E.L.D., where she has these operatives in the field. And it's, I think that the name for Wyatt Russell's superhero character is U.S. Agent.
I think that's
his superhero name. He once was Captain America, and then he lost the mantle because he was too angry.
Killed a guy in public.
Killed a guy. Now he's U.S. Agent, and she's got Ghost from the Ant-Man series, and she's got Taskmaster from Black Widow, and Yelena from Black Widow. And she's been, I guess, having people go and do covert ops for her. But as she's getting investigated and they're looking into her, you know, budget and spending, she's trying to get rid of all of the evidence that she's been doing anything that might be unconstitutional or illegal. But Yelena goes and visits her
dad. And I thought this was good because she is trying to get out. And then David Harbour is basically very, very jealous of her. Like, he is just like, he would give anything to be one of these people that goes out on these missions and everything.
He'd love to be back in the game.
Which is really great. I mean, that sets up, they're on opposite sides of, you know, the spectrum. She is depressed, wanting to get out. He's depressed, but because he wants to get in, and he would
What do you think about David Harbour in this movie?
I think he was really good. I think he was really funny. Okay. There was one time when I was like, all right, that didn't need to be there. You know, the unnecessary humor that comes in emotional moments. There was one part, but I thought David Harbour's always fun to watch. And I actually thought when he needed to be emotional, it worked. And I think that was the important part, but he was pretty funny the rest of the time. What did you think of him?
Oh, I don't know. I think I totally get enjoying his performance in this movie. To me, it was a little bit grating the way his character was written. I just kind of found him a little bit obnoxious. And also, I'm not sure that Harbour pulls the accent off great. I think that the accent is like pretty. I also just like, it's always weird to me when Yelena and her dad are talking to each other and they're both speaking English. In these like thick Russian accents. And I'm like, neither one of these actors are Russian. And I think Florence Pugh's accents is a little bit better than David Harbour's, but neither one of them are like great. And it just makes for a viewing experience where I'm just kind of like, it's one of those things where you just kind of have to accept that like, David Harbour and Florence Pugh are not going to learn Russian for this movie.
And they're
not going to have them speaking Russian for like, you know, a decent amount of the runtime of this film.
Yeah.
They're just not going to do that in a Marvel movie. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I totally see that too. I think Florence Pugh's accent is much more acceptable than David Harbour. David Harbour's is pretty thick.
Yeah.
He's laying it on pretty thick, which is kind of crazy. Cause in Black Widow, the beginning of the movie, he's speaking in an American accent.
Yeah.
Like, and I know that you can kind of like do that, and I'm sure that's hard, but like,
when he's like so deep undercover. Yeah. Like when he's like, but also it's like the fact that Scarlett Johansson, like never, I guess, cause she got out when she was younger, or I can't remember.
Yeah. I can't remember, but whatever.
But whatever the justification is, it's sort of like how Scarlet Witch had a full-on Eastern European accent in Avengers: Age of Ultron, and then
by just, Civil War she just phased it out.
She just slowly over the films just incrementally phased it out.
And I thought that was a good idea.
I think that they should maybe, if the Thunderbolts are going to continue being in movies, I think that it's high time that Yelena and
David Harbour
just sort of phase out those just bit by bit, ease off of it. But so does anything happen before she gets called on this next mission into this
You see Bucky is kind of investigating Julie Louis-Dreyfus and
Bucky's a congressman now.
Yeah, he's a congressman, and he gets to her assistant, and the assistant and him, like, she kind of helps Bucky. But then they get, basically Yelena's like, I want out. And she's like, okay, one more job and you're out. And she's like, okay. So she's like, you got to go kill Ghost. She's trying to steal all these secrets. So they go to this one place. It's in the middle of the desert.
Did it say which desert we're in the movie? I didn't catch that.
It was filmed in Utah, though. That's the Utah.
Right. It looks very much like the Mojave Desert. Yeah. Like, it looks very much. But I was like, we were in DC, and there's a sequence coming up in this movie where David Harbour drives in his limo from Maryland to wherever this location is in the desert. Yeah. And I was like, in that car, that is a week long drive to the Mojave Desert. Easy. And I was like, I was trying to think, like, where else in America could that be that's closer to the East Coast?
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And he said, like, I wouldn't be surprised if it really is in Utah. So.
Yeah. And then later in the film, they drive in a truck from that same location to New York City. And I'm like, again, these are both like week long drives. Yeah. Like, these are, you know,
it's the magic of editing.
Yep. And I do like the pace of this film. I think this movie moves at a nice pace. And again, that's one of those things where I was just like, we're doing some time jumps with these, the car traveling, that I could have used like an Avengers jet or something to get us somewhere faster. Because I just am like, I'm sorry, if they're in that car, they can only move so fast. And
But they get to this facility, and Yelena is trying to kill Ghost. And then when they get in, Taskmaster and U.S. agent show up, and they're all trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
And ultimately, Taskmaster does get shot in the head pretty quickly,
which is a kind of a shock.
I was like, are they going to bring her back? Like, yeah, that'd be crazy.
I didn't like that. I was like, oh man, I was kind of excited for Taskmaster.
I was a little too. I was like, really? They're really killing her off? Like, wow, that's
mostly just because she's the only other person who's like got something different going on. Like, in this group of ragtag misfits, we've got three guys who all basically have the same thing.
Yes.
We've got U.S. Agent and Winter Soldier and Red Guardian, who are all basically powers-wise. Yeah, they all took the serum. Yeah. And then we've got one girl that went to the Black Widow place, Red Sparrow training, whatever they call that. And then we've got Ghost, who actually has a different set of powers.
Yes.
Taskmaster would have been our only other person who, like, she has a similar set of skills to Yelena because she's got something else going on. And so I was just for the sake of variety and diversity in the group, I was kind of like, oh, bummer.
she could have done some cool stuff. And this fight scene is really cool. I had a lot of fun with this because they're all going after one person.
Yeah.
And and Ghost does have a really cool power, and they use it really well. And I think they use it well throughout the whole movie, which is good. But this was fun, and they're all trying to fight each other. Then they finally, Ghost kills Taskmaster and shoots her in the head, which is kind of crazy. And then they all stop, and someone inadvertently lets Bob out of his coffin or whatever he was in. And so Bob is there, and then they're all just trying to figure out, they figure out pretty quickly that this is an incinerator, and they're all supposed to kill each other or they're going to die in this fire.
Yeah, so I did like this sequence. I like this action sequence where they're all, you know, target. You're my target. You're my target. I think this is fun, and it's a well-choreographed sequence.
Yeah.
But I got to say, this whole, like, escape room that Julia Louis-Dreyfus puts them in is pretty, like, this is one of those things where I was thinking about it in the movie theater. I was going, like, why is there a timer on the wall? Like, and I go, yep, of course, it's a movie. They can't just hit a detonator and the bomb goes off. Yeah. It's always got to be... In 3 minutes, this whole room will go. It's like, why?
Oh, no.
You know, it's like, it's Scott Evil from Austin Powers. Like, I have a gun in my room. In two
shoot him.
I'll shoot him in the head. It'll be done. Scott, you just don't get it, do you?
That's so true. That really is exactly what that scene was. Because the escape was. Yeah.
Because it's just like, she... Like, it'd be one thing if we found out later that Julia Louis-Dreyfus had constructed a scenario to see if she could bring them together as a team. That was like, if it was revealed later in the plot that she, like, was giving them a puzzle to solve as a team. Mm. And that's why there's like, oh, like the power box is here on the wall. And if we reroute the power, then we can get Ghost out of the room and we can get past this sonic shield. We've got a timer on the wall. We've got there's pieces inside these boxes that will help us solve this puzzle before we're incinerated. Yeah. And if we found out later on that she was, I don't know, but it just, the way it's constructed in the film is literally like, she's done a terrible job at,
yeah,
like she puts them in this room where she locks them underground in the desert in a black site that is set to incinerate all. And it's like, don't put a timer on the wall and don't put the power source for the room in the room. Just incinerate them. Movie over. But the movie can't do that. So I just wish that somehow the writers of the film could be a little more thoughtful about, like, how is our team going to solve this problem?
Yeah.
Rather than just going, the solution is just right there. It's like, here's the off button.
Yeah.
For the, you know,
they could have honestly had Bob do something.
Sure.
I mean, that actually probably would have been the better solution, is like, they realize, oh my gosh, this guy is super powerful. But I mean, I was willing to overlook it because like it was dumb, but also like, it wasn't the dumbest thing that I've seen in a movie.
No,
it's pretty standard.
Yeah. And it's exactly. That's one of those things where I'm like, this is going to be stuff like this is going to exist in pretty much every single Marvel movie.
Yeah.
And for some reason, like, you just can't get around it.
No.
I did notice it and I think it's funny, but anyway, they wind up finding the power source for the room. They're able to reroute it. Ghost is able to open a door, get them out before the incinerator happens. And then they find like an elevator shaft where they're like, okay, well, there's no power in here, so we can't call the elevator, but how do we get up this shaft? You know? I kind of like this little bit where US Agent does a big jump to see how he can jump out of the elevator shaft, and he can't. And Bob comes up with the idea that if they all go back to back, they can kind of shimmy up the elevator shaft. And I thought, you know, I kind of like these sequences in this movie of them being just sort of an underpowered ragtag team that needs to kind of, you know, begrudgingly work together. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that sequence was pretty, pretty funny. Yeah. They ultimately do get up and Wyatt Russell has to jump to the opening, but it causes everybody else to fall, but they all catch each other and then they all get out. But yeah, instantly, like, none of them like each other.
Yeah.
Okay. So we missed a part that's actually pretty important, because after the explosion goes off and before they get in the elevator shaft, like, when the explosion happens, Yelena is holding, or
correct?
No, she gets knocked out and then she wakes up and she's remembering something from her past where she helped another. She had this girl come out and then some Russian guy comes and kills the girl. And this is obviously a traumatic experience for her. But this was like her first test, you know, correct, to become a Red Sparrow or whatever. And she's there and she's trying to figure out what's going on. And she looks over and she sees Bob, and then like the vision ends and she wakes up and they're looking at each other and just kind of like, she kind of shakes it off as like, what was that? Mm-hmm. And then they go to the elevator shaft, and when they all get up, Bob touches, Wyatt Russell, and Wyatt Russell has a vision at that point of him watching, he's supposed to be watching his kid, but his kid is crying and he's not doing anything. He's just paying attention to himself. And this whole time,
stories about
himself,
about how he's like a disgraced, you know, he was disgraced hero in the public eye. And
And he's like, you know, he's not, this whole time he's been talking about how great he is and like how he manages being a father and a superhero, you know, and all
I kind of, I liked Wyatt Russell's character a lot more in this movie than I did in the series. Falcon and Winter Soldier. And I like that they play on his arrogance that like, I thought it was funny that when they're all putting it together earlier on that like, oh, we were all sent here to kill each other because she's trying to kill all of us. He's like, well, not me though. He's like, not me. He's like, I was sent here to kill all of you. And he's like, but like, I'm not, he's like, I'm a very important asset, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that he can't accept that he could be just as expendable as everyone else. Cause he's got this. And I kind of like that they play on that. His character flaw is his ego.
Yes.
And his inability to be honest about his shortcomings.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, in the show and also in Captain America, the first Avenger, the doctor tells Steve Rogers, this serum is going to make you more of what you are.
Yeah.
So if you're a good person, you're going to become an even better person, but it magnifies everything about you. And and Wyatt Russell's character is, he's totally into himself. And like, I did like that about, I am totally with you. I liked his character way better in this movie than in the TV show. And I actually thought he played it really, really well, because like when the shoe does drop that his wife has left him and took their son, like that part hits pretty hard, and he plays it actually really well. They don't draw much attention to it. You just see it in his face. And I thought, I actually was like, that was really, it made an impact. It made the impact that I felt like the filmmaker wanted it to. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, this movie's showing us that all of these characters have things that are troubling them, and things that are things in their pasts that are, you know, I think that we could have maybe found there, maybe there is a moment that got edited out of the movie where we find a moment for Ghost, and Ghost, we definitely know a lot about what Ghost has been through from what we see in Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is like, she's got a very hard existence and a hard life. And her condition is like hard to live with.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe there was a scene of that, or maybe they just figured you already know that about her.
Yeah.
And they'll give us more insight into some of these other characters, but they get out, and then Julia Louis-Dreyfus has shown up to the, cause she's found out that they made it out. She's shown up with this whole task force to take them out. But this is another sequence where I'm like, I don't get what her character wants here, because she goes up to the main general who's sending men in to confront the team, and she goes non-lethal, and he's like, what? He's like, I got him set to lethal. And she's like, no, non-lethal. And looking, and I think in the moment I was kind of like, oh yeah, I sure. And then later I was like, wait, but she was just going to incinerate them.
Yeah.
Why? And the movie doesn't ever justify why all of a sudden she's like, don't kill them, just, you know, detain them if you can. It's like, why would that all of a sudden be the, is it because she found out that Bob was there?
That is what it is. She found out that Bob was there, and that, because she's like, who is that guy? And then she's like, oh, I need him, he actually lived from the procedure. And then I also think it might have been like optics, like people knew about it, so if she tries to kill them, then it looks like she's guilty, whereas if she could just save them and kill them later and make it look like an accident, it kind of saves her, right? So it does kind of make sense.
Yeah.
I'll give him that one, because, everybody, because her assistants, like, people have already picked it up. Like, they're picking up the story, and they're running a new, you know, they're talking about it already. So,
yeah.
And then, but whatever.
Yeah, but the Thunderbolts get out of this situation. They sort of fight their way out, and one by one, they're like coming back for each other. And there's always these different sequences where it looks like, oh, one of them's going to abandon the others and go out for themselves, but they keep coming back and helping each other. And and they sort of put on the clothes of the military, got the strike force that's coming in, and they get out by disguising themselves, and they get into a truck, and then Bob goes back to distract the military people to make it, you know, so that they can get out clean.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been clear pretty much from the jump that, like, Bob, there's something going on with Bob. Bob is special in some way. Yeah. And Bob winds up getting shot a bunch by machine guns. And we find out that Bob is superpowered
And very superpowered.
Very superpowered. I kind of like this. I kind of like the way that his body like flies into the air kind of uncontrolled. Yeah. And that it's almost like the powers are not that the powers are he's not in control of them. They're, you know, separate from him.
He doesn't even know how powerful he is.
Yeah. And that the powers almost have a mind of their own. But yeah, the Thunderbolts get away in a truck because Bob's distracting everybody. But when Bob comes back down, he hits the ground so hard that he causes a huge avalanche, and the truck that they're in rolls over, and then they have to basically go out on foot from there.
And then the Red Guardian comes and picks him up
in his limo.
Yeah, which is also this was definitely like the way that he found out about it was he was driving the limo of Julia Louise Dreyfus, and she says the whole plan, and it's like that was really convenient.
Yeah, there's like, like I said, I enjoyed watching this movie because I enjoyed the characters, and I enjoyed I thought that like the construction of it was like I could but when you sit back and think about a lot of like the way that stuff happens here, again, it's like, so wait, she picked he happened to be her limo. Wouldn't she know who her driver is everywhere she goes? Yeah. And she just picks some random limo service that's called Red Guardian Limo Service.
Yeah,
and or is he a driver for us? Who knows? But he drives in his crappy red limo from Maryland out to wherever, whatever desert this is. Yeah. It seems like he gets there in a day, you know, like it seems like he gets there in like 12 to 18 hours, which is impossible. But whatever, they get in his, they get in his car, and they have a nice little action sequence here, which is kind of their first big, like team up sequence.
Yeah.
Where the military is on their tail, they're shooting at them, and they're kind of getting their butts kicked. They're kind of getting, you know,
well, there's three like huge Hummers that are coming after him with huge turrets on it, and they're shooting, and they're not, it doesn't look good for him.
And then Bucky shows up because Senator Bucky has decided, or Congressman Bucky has decided, that he wants to be back in the game again. And he wants to take on whatever Julia Louis-Dreyfus is doing head on. So he shows up and he does. I also thought that this was a thing that kind of made me go like, huh, because Bucky's got the Winter Soldier like tools that he had in Captain America Winter Soldier. Right. But I was like, have we seen that gun since Captain America Winter Soldier?
No.
The gun that he shoots at Nick Fury's car and it makes the car blow up and flip over. He's got that again. And it's like this movie is just saying like, yeah, that's his Winter Soldier gun. But it's like, I don't think so. I think that his Winter Soldier thing is his arm. Like, that gun is just something that Hydra gave him for that specific mission. I don't think that that's just like his Winter Soldier gun that he always has. But then this movie's just sort of like, yeah, that's his Winter Soldier thing. Yeah. I'm like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
I did totally give into it because it's cool.
It is cool.
And you know what? He's probably like, you know, hey, that thing worked out. I'm going to use it again. And I thought it was cool. So that one didn't bother me. But
I just think logically, like, does he have that? Like, I guess this movie's saying that he does, but why has he not used it since then?
It's a good question. But there's
a few things that they do with the Winter Soldier in this movie where they're just sort of like, eh, remember that? And I'm like, sure. You know, it's another reason why I'm not like all the way back in. I'm not just like, oh yeah, I'm back, you know, but Bucky shows up. They have a fun little action sequence here. They get away kind of by the skin of their teeth. He really helps out a lot. And they go and
he shoots them. He shoots their car and they're like, oh, and then he you know, detains all of them.
Yeah.
And they go, they hold up in this like abandoned, I don't know, auto shop or something.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when the assistant calls Bucky and is like, hey, because he's been trying to get the assistant to turn to their side. Mm-hmm. And she's like, hey, this is kind of crazy. Like this, she's got this guy named Bob, right? The assistant's like, she's got this guy named Bob. And it's everything that they have been, everything that the Thunderbolts have been telling them is what she says. Like, oh, there's this really dangerous guy. You got to be careful. And he's like, okay. So he decides that they need to go to New York because everything that they said is true.
I kind of like that He's got him tied up in this garage. He's got like, he's got like iron bars wrapped around Red Guardian and US Agent, you know? I kind of like that little detail that he's like tying them up with.
And she, he's got something for Ghost where she can't, I don't know, phase or whatever. But yeah, that was cool. And one thing we failed to mention before is like, which I thought this was actually really funny. Wyatt Russell is that he's trying to like, oh, I should be the leader of this group. You know why? Because I was three-time state champ. Go Bears, right? And then Yelena's like, well, I was in a kid soccer team called the Thunderbolts and we never won a game, right? And so that's why they name, that's why Red Guardian wants to name the team Thunderbolts. Yeah. Because they kind of use it as a joke. And he's like, yeah, the Thunderbolts, you know, and he's loving it. And he keeps saying the Thunderbolts and Bucky's like, I don't know what that is.
Also a big thing for Red Guardian is like, even when he wants to get back in the earlier scene, when he's like, oh, I would give anything to be back. And, you know, he's initially talking about the thrill of combat and helping people. But then he's like, and like the praise from the audience and the endorsements and the deals and like, and what he really wants is like the money, like that he would love to be, you know? And so that's a big part of his character is, and a big thing about the Thunderbolts is that he, him and Yelena can't agree on who the Thunderbolts were sponsored by. And, you know, and his big thing is kind of like sponsorships. Like he wants to get, he wants to get brand deals done. You know, he wants to be back in the spotlight so that he can be on Wheaties boxes and things like that, you know?
Yeah, he really wants to be on the Wheaties box, which comes up later. But yeah, that's, I mean, that's ultimately where they get the Thunderbolts. I think this is really pretty much the midpoint of the movie.
Yeah.
Where they pretty much get a new resolve to go and they're going to stop. What is her name? Valentina.
And Valentina's over in New York and she is trying to see if she can kind of program Sentry or Bob into being you know, kind of like her superhero. She was doing some project where they were doing something to a lot of different people. Everyone died except for one guy. Bob lived and they were trying to create a superhuman.
And Bob is really unstable, really mentally unstable. He's had addiction problems and he's you know, he definitely has depression, at least if
it feels bad. Like to me what the movie is alluding to is bipolar disorder. What Bob deals with is he's got two different aspects to his mental health, which swing in extremes where he's got an extreme ego that can be really, really, you know, kind of, you know, delusions of grandeur and grandiose and can kind of lead him to fits of mania where he kind of, you know, probably before he had the superpowers, he has ideas like I could rule the world. But then you give a guy like that actual superpowers. And what does it do to that aspect of his mental health? Yeah. And then he's got the other aspect of bipolar disorder, which is there's the mania, there's all the, and then there's the depression aspect of it where it swings all the way in the other direction of what does anything matter? Nothing matters. I'm useless. I shouldn't even exist. Yeah. You know, and there's sort of these two. Well, we come to meet the other one later, but I'd say Sentry is kind of the mania, ego driven aspect of his personality.
Oh, yeah.
And then the other personality, I think, actually has a name, and I think it is the Void. And that's the sort of characteristic of Bob's and it's sort of like if you think about like that same super soldier thing that you said earlier that it amplifies what's already there. That if you think about that with a person like Bob where he's already got this mental illness that has these extreme swings from feeling like I can fly and feeling like the strongest person in the world, feeling like I can do anything to feeling completely useless, and you supercharge that and superpower that and actually give that the engine of a god and see what that does. And so, yeah, Bob becomes a really interesting character here.
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked Bob. I really liked, Lewis Pullman and, that's his name, right? Yeah.
And his performance is fantastic.
His performance is really, really good. And, but yeah, he gets, this was definitely a problem, but whatever, I gave into it. So he is meeting with Valentina and she is like, she's really buttering him up. Like, you are this amazing person. You can do all these amazing things. And then she touches him and she gets into that like dark space. And she sees her dad getting killed when she lived in Italy, when she was a little girl or something. And so she's kind of, she can definitely seem like she's afraid of him, which I thought was interesting. She's afraid of him, but then her desire to kind of control things takes over, and she still thinks that she can change him to be what she wants him to be, which I thought was a kind of a cool little, you know, character trait. I thought that was nice. But she basically tells him like, oh, you can do all these amazing things. And his training takes like 2 minutes, and
right.
he's like the best superhero, like all the Avengers combined into one. So
yeah, and this is kind of where, like, I think this midpoint shift, and again, the movie's moving at a nice clip, but this is where it feels like we're missing maybe some potential time to, even if it feels like it, maybe it slows stuff down a little bit, just to just a little bit of like maybe something extra in here to also give our characters time to get from, because again, there are two things here in the timeline that I think could be fixed by building things out a little bit are them in the desert waiting for Red Guardian to show up. And maybe that just takes a little longer. Like, there could be a funny sequence where they're like walking through the desert and it's been like a few days, and they all like, you know, have like their shirts wrapped around their heads and stuff. And they're like, you know, and they have to sort of learn to work together because they have to survive in the Mojave Desert together for like a few days. And if you can figure out a way in the screenplay to build that out a little bit longer,
right,
then I can believe, you know, you can do a few things there. You can develop the team dynamic a little bit more, and you can also believably have that travel that travel time work. And then on their way back, they're driving to New York City, and give us a few days of Valentino working with Bob to, you know, give our team the time to get there, and also give Bob the time to grow into the character that he's about to be in our final act. But I do like that we're in the former Avengers Tower, which is the former Stark Tower in New York City, and that's where Valentina is sort of headquartered here. Our team drives into New York City, having driven out of the Mojave Desert in what like, you know, overnight in a truck, and sure, why not? And I kind of like this little action sequence where they just ram the truck into the lobby of the Avengers Tower and get out. And I like this little fight sequence.
Yeah, where, it was fun.
Wyatt Russell dragging the guy's head along the truck with his shield. Yeah. I like how Wyatt Russell's shield is all beat up and mangled and stuff. I like all these little like the grittiness of this movie.
Yeah.
And this
What is the shield made of? I guess it's not a big deal, but it's like, it's not vibranium.
It's not vibranium, but it's pretty strong. I can't remember.
Like titanium or something? Or
they say it in Winter Soldier and the Falcon. They say it in there, and I can't remember what it is, but it's something
strong. Something strong, but not like that. But yeah, this was a great fight scene. Again, the hand-to-hand combat and like the cool fight choreography made it so much more fun to watch.
Yeah.
And then Valentina comes over the PA system, is like, I left the door open for you guys to come in.
Yeah.
And so they just like stop fighting,
which is funny.
She's
like, get in the elevator and come upstairs.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay.
And so they all go upstairs. They come in. She introduces Sentry. Bucky's going to grab her. Somebody's going to grab her. And then Sentry stops the person.
Yeah.
And then he comes down. He's got blonde hair. He's got his suit on. And she's like, this is Sentry. He's amazing. And then they have like a fight scene with him.
And he's just the most incredibly powerful superhero, like maybe ever in the MCU. This guy's completely impenetrable. You can't even touch him.
You can't even get close to him. Like, you punch him and it does nothing. And it was a cool fight scene, but this is the one that I was like, that wasn't very cool, because it was very CG. He throws them up, like, but some of it was cool. It's not like it was bad, but you just could tell that they were doing a lot of VFX in this sequence.
Well, also, this is kind of like one of the problems of like that I had with Captain America, Brave New World, and is like Sam Wilson as a character is just sort of, he's kind of too underpowered for this universe to be such an important character. And then this team is like, even though we've got three super soldiers on this team, you know, when you put them up against someone who actually has real powers, it's like, we need a Spider-Man or a Doctor Strange or a Iron Man or a Thor, or like, we need somebody else here to kind of balance the scales a little bit more.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's another thing about this movie is we have this crazy climax in New York City. And it's like, once again, it's like, where is Doctor Strange? Where is Spider-Man? At least those two, Like, you telling me Peter Parker's not seeing this? He's not, you know, like he's busy.
Yeah.
Doesn't know
he got sucked in to the darkness. Yeah,
he's watching Uncle Ben die over and over again.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, in the darkness.
In his shame room.
Yeah, in his little shame room. But they have this fight scene with Sentry. It just absolutely destroys him.
Yeah.
And I do like the way that this continues with like the Thunderbolts that they go down and Yelena kind of storms off and she's like, we're not a team. We suck. We're losers. We lost. We can't fight that guy. And, you know, kind of like the Thunderbolts, we never won a game. We're losers, you know?
And that scene was great. And I think the thing that we didn't really talk about as much is Yelena and Bob have a connection pretty early on. And I really liked this through line throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
She keeps trying to tell him like, Bob, you don't want to do this. Like you know, she told him initially, like, you just got to push your feelings way down. You know, it's like kind of a joke, but they are bonding over their trauma that they have. But she can't really reach Bob. And then, she storms off and then they have a great scene between, David Harbour and Florence Pugh, where she is just talking about like, she's lonely all the time. Right. And David Harbour actually he kind of drops the whole act of like, he really wants to do all this. And he kind of actually comes to his daughter and like consoles her. I thought this was a really great scene. I thought it was good that they took enough time, excuse me, to kind of like spend time with this scene and like her problem that she has. And Florence Pugh gives such a good performance that like it works really, really well. I really enjoyed it.
I mean, look, that's another thing that just works about this movie is they've got some of the best actors right now working. And I mean, Sebastian Stan, I don't particularly care. I don't think that his character has a lot to do in this movie. I kind of wish that they had done more with his character in this film and given him more to do. But like Sebastian Stan is like one of the best actors in Hollywood right now. And they sort of, I think he's kind of wasted in this movie, but Florence Pugh carries this movie really nicely.
Yeah.
And like you said, Luke Poulsen also does an excellent, is that his name?
Lewis Pullman. Yeah.
I got it completely reversed. Lewis Pullman is also great. And you know, like I said, this is the most I've liked Wyatt Russell in kind of anything. I don't really care for Wyatt Russell.
Yeah.
And I liked him in this movie more than I have before. But Florence Pugh is kind of our emotional center and heart of this film. Yes. And she does a great job carrying us through the narrative. And she's a, you know.
And I mean, it really fits so well thematically because she's in this whole thing of her character does not feel like she is a good person.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And she is so down on herself and all she's lonely and she doesn't have anyone that she can talk to. She lost her sister. Right. And she's still dealing with that. And like, she just doesn't feel like a good person. Right. And
this is also something that we saw Scarlett Johansson's character deal with in the first three phases.
Yeah.
We saw that Black Widow would occasionally struggle with her past and with things that she had done. And like there's scenes where Steve Rogers tries to console her about like, she's like, you don't know like who I am and what I've done, you know? And he's like, well, you know, and she tries to help Jeremy Renner with that in Endgame where he's just like, she knows what it's like to,
She's a very morally gray character, which makes her more interesting. Right. But she is trying to do something good. So she just feels like she's failed. Like she has failed. There's nothing that they can do, you know, and she's just a horrible person. And then, you know, David Harbour kind of brings her out of it. And then we have while this is going on, Valentina is talking with Bob Sentry, and he's like, oh, this needs to be a partnership. And she's like, no, you need to work for me.
Yeah.
And he realizes like, well, why do I have to listen to you? You're just a human. Like, I'm the most powerful thing that there is. And she has a kill switch, which she kills him.
And I kind of like this too. I like her performance here where she's like, bummer. Yeah. She's like, man, I was really hope. And she's like, all right, this is so annoying that I just spent. But again, this beat could work better if we see her, if we saw like what she actually invested into, if she actually
There's more
spent some time. But anyway, she she uses her kill switch on him and it works. He dies. But I think it's actually her assistant that
her assistant, because he stops her and she drops it. Then the assistant comes and pushes the button.
Pushes the button and
he dies. But then in dying, he becomes the void.
Yeah.
And so
I love the design of this character, by the way.
Really cool.
I think it's a really cool looking thing and like a really simple effect and really visually striking that he just sort of is like this shadow.
Yeah.
And with like these like kind of like points in just the.
Tiny points of light on his eyes.
Yeah.
Which I mean, you know, like that's the thing. You can tell if something is living by reflections in their eyes, which I love that too. It's just a small detail. You can see that there's something in his eyes. So there is something there.
Yeah. Right?
But he is a shadow. Like, and they used it really well. He wasn't like just completely black and like an outline. Like you could see little features on his face. Mm-hmm. But the eyes are really like you see when his eyes open because you see those little points of light.
And he basically goes out and starts just vaporize. It looks like he's killing people en masse. I like the arrival of the void, kind of when everyone looks up in the sky and there's just like this black shadow. Just it's very, you know, kind of like fallen Superman, you know?
Yeah.
And I like the feeling. I just like the visual storytelling here for this final act, like the feeling of hopelessness this, basically what the void is doing is it's just basically superpowered depression that it's just spreading onto New York City. And it just, everything that the shadow touches just turns into a shadow.
Yeah. I gotta say, when I saw this in the trailer, I was like, that's kind of dumb. Like that effect was pretty dumb. But within the context of the movie, exactly what you said, like this huge depression that's just filling this whole, all of New York City, it actually worked really, really well. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's really cool. So it's kind of weird because in the trailer it looked dumb, but in the context of the movie, it fit so thematically well that I loved it and I thought it was great.
Especially when we see we have this nice little sequence where the Thunderbolts are kind of like helping people.
It's
sort of like a nice little team up sequence where they're like trying to do some good. And they, US agent catches this giant slab of concrete and they all have to lift the slab of concrete together.
And I love every single character has their own one little sequence. And so Bucky like has to, you know, it's in the trailer. He hits the car with his arm. And it flips over the people, so he saves them. And then David Harbour has to save this girl, and it like he has some, you know, or he saves these people, and he's like holding them, getting them to safety. And then Ghost, what does she do? She has to phase.
This is the thing. I do think Ghost is a little bit forgotten.
Another
thing about Taskmaster is like we have two women that it's kind of like we just have Florence Pugh in the group and I'm like, we got Ghost there, but Ghost is like the woman of color too, that I'm like, come on, like she's here.
She has the coolest power, which they do use very effectively. But her emotionally and like acting wise, definitely kind of left behind. Like,
and I think that Taskmaster, like we definitely, in this storyline, we definitely could have done something with Taskmaster.
They could have. Yeah.
Or Task Rabbit or Taskmaster.
Taskmaster. Taskrabbit. Where did that come from?
There's an app called Taskrabbit where it's like people like say like, I need someone to put in this like shelf. And then someone's like, I'll come over and hammer your shelf in.
Nice. Okay.
It's like a gig economy thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they have this nice little thing, but as the void is covering everything in shadows, they're starting to feel more and more like there's nothing we can, we're not a strong enough group to actually stop this. We do see this little girl that initially gets saved. We see her poofed into a shadow really feels like, whoa, this movie's like going to a really dark place. And then Florence Pugh
the girl went to a shadow, I was like, whoa, it really does like bring you back. Like, oh my gosh. Like,
yeah.
Cause you don't know if they're dead or not. Like,
it feels like they are. It feels like in War of the Worlds when people just kind of go poof and and vaporize. Yeah. Florence Pugh comes over and kind of gives herself up to the shadow. And this is tying in with her whole character's arc where from the beginning, she's been saying she wants out. She doesn't want to do this anymore. And she doesn't feel like a good person. And she doesn't. So she's sort of giving into this like spreading sadness. And, you know, But what we, at least that's what it seems like. But I think there's also in her mind, she's like, maybe there's a way, the only way
well,
in there is.
Yeah. I mean, and this is again, like structurally, you want your main character to be at their lowest point right before the climax. So this is like going into act three. She obviously was in her lowest point and David Harbour brings her out, but she realizes that I have to get to Bob. You know, she realizes like I am worth something, but she's like, I've got to get to Bob. That's the only way that we can do this. I mean, she doesn't say any of that, but I could, you know, you can tell that that's what's going on in her mind. I think she says I have to get to Bob or something, but she goes into the darkness. And then also thematically, she has to fight her own demons to get what she needs. Like literally she has to fight her own demons, which I thought was really, really cool. And they never say that, but just thematically, like, the whole movie is about depression and overcoming your past to get to your better self. Right. And everybody kind of has to do that. And so she goes back to where she killed the person killed her friend. And she finds a way to kind of get out of this room. She gets into another room again, where she has to like, she's drunk, passed out on the floor. And she kind of has to like fight herself. And she goes through all these different shame rooms. She goes back to one where she's in the, you know, the Red Sparrows or whatever. And they're like whipping other people. Anyway,
I really liked this sequence. Yeah. So we're sort of going through her subconscious, but she's looking for Bob in there. This felt like Everything Everywhere All at Once to me, where we're sort of like going, the climax of that movie is, you know, sort of turning, cause the whole thing is that the daughter in that movie, her character feels hopeless, and it's very similar emotional climax where the everything bagel that she's trying to sort of consume the universe with is this feeling that nothing matters, the nothingness that she's being consumed by. And her mother has to go into that sort of spiral with her and pull her out of it. And that's sort of what's going on in this climax. But I really liked to seeing this in a Marvel movie, that we're sort of doing like a dive into the subconscious and the mentality of these characters and what they're dealing with emotionally. It feels like the right place for us to go for our climax. And eventually all of the Thunderbolts go into the shadow with her, and they're all sort of in there together. And then they're all trying to help Bob get out. But you know, Bob's got an even more difficult web to get through than a lot of them. So they've got to get through all of Bob's different shame rooms.
And, which the meth chicken sign I thought was pretty funny. It's like they first have to confront his dad, who is obviously abusive to him and his mother, and then they go into this other room where at one point he was a sign wielding chicken, but he said he was on meth. I like this one worked for me
because
it was
bit.
Just so weird, like they're going through all these rooms and then they get to like the chicken guy, and he's beating everybody up with the sign, and he's like, I was on meth. And that was funny. I felt it was placed fine, but then it was good, but
I really like, we basically wind up back where the Void was born, in this area where he, at his lowest point, where he was so kind of done with existing that he was willing to try anything. And he was willing to even do this highly volatile experiment where he most likely was going to die to just see if there was a way out of it. And you know, he has no option, but what I liked about this sequence was I knew immediately once Bob started punching the Void, I knew instinctively that's not the way to fix that problem. Like I know as a person who struggles with mental health myself that it doesn't help when there, you know, there's something in psychology right now called parts theory that some, you know, I have friends who are therapists who use this modality. My personal therapist does not use this modality, but I know people who do. And the idea is that your brain is made up of parts, that there are different kind of like Inside Out, like there are different components that have different jobs. And sometimes when I'm like having a panic attack or when I'm having a depressive spell, I'll be really hard on the part of me that is panicking, and I'll be like, stop, worry, you know, and kind of beating them up. And it doesn't work. I have to learn how to be compassionate with those parts of myself and have to understand that they're just reacting in a way that, you know, they were trained to help me feel safe. And I have to figure out how to communicate with them in a way that's more compassionate. So I liked that. I felt like the emotional heft of this moment was really solid. That the Thunderbolts all kind of gather around Bob and hug him and give him support, kind of, rather than you know, so many Marvel movies are like, it's solved by punching, but this movie is like kind of solved by compassion and softness and love. But I would, if I had one change to this sequence, what I would change is, I think Bob needs to actually hug the void. I think Bob needs to be sought, rather than just being pulled away from the void by his friends. He needs to be, but maybe that's somewhere that this character can go later on.
Yeah. Like, I don't think he's done with the void, because in the comics, the very little that I know, he's always dueling with his identity.
I
totally see what you're saying. And also I also have depression and, you know, mental health issues. And I like, this part was very emotional and I felt it and I loved it because it wasn't just punching. Like, you know, Bob is punching the void, which is what the void wants. Mm-hmm. And he starts becoming black and he's almost consumed by his own self-deprecation. And they get out and they do just give him this hug, which I was like, wow, that was crazy. Like, you know, and that is, you know, if you're having a hard time, look to others, you know, and that's kind of, it's kind of like the thing, these people are reluctant to work together. You know, when you have mental health issues, you don't want other people's help. You feel like you can do it yourself, but in reality, you cannot. Like, you need
isolation
other help.
Yeah, isolation is one of the most dangerous things.
Yeah.
When you're in that really dark place. And sometimes it can't be fixed altogether. So it's not like Bob's going to heal all of his trauma by hugging the void and fixing all of it. But his community and friends can at least pull him back from the void and pull him out of the spiral.
Yeah. And he's taking that step to bring others in to help himself get out of it. So I thought it worked extremely well. I did find it interesting because this is a very, in some ways, this is also very similar to Brave New World, but it was executed so much better in this movie because in the end, Sam just tells, you know, he tells Harrison Ford just to calm down.
Right.
And he calms down. And it was like, so, I mean, it's way more involved than that. And for me, but this one worked so well because everything was leading up to it.
Well, I was going to say Bob's struggle with his powers is very similar to Bruce Banner. It's very similar to what the Hulk goes through of like Banner has this thing inside of him that he's always wrestling with and trying to figure out. And what was interesting is they were building some kind of arc with that, starting in Avengers Age of Ultron, going into Thor Ragnarok and going into Infinity War. They're building some kind of arc of like Banner struggling with the Hulk and trying to find some kind of equilibrium. In Thor Ragnarok, he lives as the Hulk for like years on this planet, and you know, and the Hulk just kind of takes over, and we kind of see this tug of war. I feel like it's one of the narrative failings of those first three series to have the sort of homeostasis of Banner and Hulk happen off screen. That when we get to Avengers Endgame, he's fixed it in the interim. He's fixed it between movies and he's just goes, I just figured out how to put them together. And it's like, that's a story that you've been building, that it's unfortunate that we don't actually get to see that. I hope with Bob going forward, they're able to continue showing this wrestling with, because obviously like if Bob's going to be on the team and be as powerful as he is, there are going to be times where his powers are going to need to come out. And it's going to be who comes out? Does the void come out or does Sentry come out?
Yeah.
And who's more dangerous? And can they be controlled? Can Bob retain some kind of, you know, hand on the steering wheel when one of these personalities is out?
Yeah. And I think everybody, even the Russos acknowledged that, like, we wish we could have done more with the Hulk, but it just worked. Yeah. It worked so much better just to have that so that everything else could work. But yes, hopefully moving forward, they don't gloss over that with Bob, because that's the Jekyll and Hyde story is always a good one that you can kind of play out. And I hope they do. I think they will. I think they will play it out. But yeah,
I think Bob's is interesting because there's like three. It's like, this guy,
Sentry, Bob, and then Void.
Yeah. And Bob's trying to rein in both of these extreme aspects of his mental health.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this was a whole great sequence. This end, you know, this climax is not just, I mean, it was exciting because they had to get through these different shame rooms and they had to save each other. But the fact that they end on a hug of just like pulling him off. And that's where everything, like he decides to look to his friends. They all end up back in New York and then the darkness kind of goes away and everybody comes back.
And we realize he didn't kill a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
He just sort of put them all in their own individual shame rooms.
Yeah.
But yeah, then they walk around kind of like a curtain together. And on the other, like on the other side of it is Julia Louis-Dreyfus with the press and everything. And she announces them as the new Avengers to try to kind of save her own butt. Like, look, this, I put this all together and I organized this new team. And so,
I actually liked that. I thought that was pretty. Yeah. It was a great way for her to like manipulate everything to her advantage, which is kind of her own little superpower. But yeah, I thought it was pretty funny.
And so they're the new Avengers and Bob and,
well, and the thing that I love too. So she says like, here's the new Avengers. Everybody claps and they're like, what? And then Florence Pugh goes up to Julia Louis-Dreyfus and is like, we own you now.
Yeah.
And you could see it on her face. She's like, oh crap. And I thought that was actually pretty great. I really I like that. But it's also kind of, again, this kind of goes into the joke of it. Like, oh, it was an accident. They're the Avengers. They're not really the Avengers.
Yeah. Cause like an Avengers movie, if this was actually an event, and that's the thing is like, this is not an Avengers movie. This is Thunderbolts.
It's
Thunderbolts. Yeah. And if an Avengers movie just, it has to have more characters, period. Like Sam Wilson needs to be here. Yeah. Tom Holland needs to be here. Benedict Cumberbatch needs to be here. Yeah. The Guardians need to show up. You know, like we just need Ant-Man needs to we just need more people here for this to be an Avengers movie. This is Thunderbolts the same way that the Fantastic Four, they're these separate groups now.
Yeah.
The Guardians, the Fantastic Four, the X-Men, and Thunderbolts will be their own thing. We have two post-credit sequences. The first one is kind of just like a joke one where Red Guardian is trying to get a woman in the store to look at a box of Wheaties that has the new Avengers on it. And, and he wants her to notice that he's on the box.
Yeah.
But the second one is the more important one to the plot. And I feel like this is a little weak when Bucky comes in and says, I talked to Sam about us all teaming up with the Avengers and it didn't go well. And I'm like, why did that not go well? Like
you guys
had
a whole show together. Why are you not friends anymore?
I feel like that's a little bit weak to just sort of be like, oh, Sam did not want to see me. And I'm like, why? Yeah. Like what?
What'd you do? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty weak, but Sam is like, he is creating his own Avengers and he's suing them for the copyright, which was weird, but
which I think is weird and petty, and like I don't get why Sam Wilson's just like I'm not gonna be in a team with you guys.
I imagine that this is gonna be one. I wonder if this is gonna be one where like in the Avengers movie it will have all happened off screen and they're like, and I kind of hope it is that way because I'm like, who cares about copyright? Like what's the big deal? Like
but they're in the Avengers Tower. They've got you know, like it looks like they've got some funding.
Yeah, they and, do. And they're all in new suits and stuff. And
And Bob's trying to keep his powers at bay. He doesn't really do anything. He just kind of sits in the corner. But obviously, we know if he's on the team that we're going to see more of these beings. But they get an alert from their computer that an interdimensional spaceship is inbound into Earth. And we see this spaceship on the screen. And they go, ooh, cool spaceship. It turns, and we see the Fantastic Four logo on the spaceship. Yeah. And this is probably the most like phase 1-3 type credit stinger that I've seen in a long time. Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen a credit stinger that I was like, okay, cool. I can actually see how this will lead into the next thing that's coming out, which is Fantastic Four. Like, remember the stinger at the end of Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness? How like Charlize Theron showed up?
Yeah.
And it was just like, who is that? And what is going on there? Or the stinger at the end of Eternals where Harry Styles showed up? And it was like, what's going like that? Like, there are so many end credit stingers to Marvel movies that have happened since Endgame that have just been nothing.
Yeah.
That have just been and this was the first one where I was like, okay, I can actually see how this will be a direct tie-in to the next project. And that feels like the franchise getting back on track somewhat. So,
yeah, I totally agree. It is interesting, though. I'm thinking like, okay, so this is, they're coming from another dimension, which I figured the Fantastic Four would be in another dimension, or another multiverse or whatever. But I also makes me think like, okay, well, does their whole world get destroyed? Like, is that going to happen?
But that's the whole thing about, we'll see. I just don't think that the MCU has handled the multiverse narrative very well so far.
No.
To me, the way that they've done it makes the prime, or like makes whatever it is, 616 or whatever it is that we're in, makes it just seem kind of inconsequential. It just seems like another universe.
Yeah.
It just seems kind of like, okay, this is the universe we care about, 'cause this is the universe where all of our characters are, but I don't know. It just feels a little. Yeah.
But, yeah. I totally agree.
Again, it's why I'm kind of like, I'm not sure that I'm as locked back in as I once was, but I did enjoy watching this movie. Thought there were some strong aspects to it. Let's get into our scores for Thunderbolts Asterisk. We do ratings on this show out of 10, 10 being the best, 1 being the worst. We give a technical rating. That's for how well the movie was constructed technically. We give a rating for the ending, how well we feel like the movie stuck the landing. We give a score for rewatchability, a score for cultural impact, and a subjective score. So, Kramer, what is your technical rating for Thunderbolts?
My technical rating is an 8. I thought that as we went over with our nitpicks, there's definitely a lot of things that, you know, are kind of, you got to make a jump for.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that they really went for, I think the screenplay is really kind of pushing it over the edge for me, because they went for a mental health issue and they really accomplished it, which was great. And then I really did like the set pieces. I really liked the action, the production design, and the cinematography was really good. So I think overall, I mean, it was a really well-made movie.
Yeah, I gave it a 7.5. So I'm just underneath where you're at. I think that this was constructed really well for the most part. And like I said, you know, it was constructed well enough for me to just enjoy it, which at this point in the MCU is not something I can always do while I'm I have a hard time turning my brain off and not just constantly going, why'd they do it like that? Or why'd they do it? I was actually able to just enjoy this movie. I really liked its climax. I felt like the movie built up to it nicely and did a good job tying everything together thematically. I liked that the movie moved at a nice pace and was just kind of fun. I liked that it felt like it had its own identity, but I do think that there was a lot of just messiness when it comes to the script and, you know, certain things that are always going to be there with Marvel movies. How about the ending?
The ending I gave an 8.5. Just the fact that it all led up to it. So it was all very structurally and thematically set up extremely well. And then the payoff of them, instead of having a huge fight, it really just became a personal climax that worked really, really well for me. So I gave it an 8.5.
I gave it an 8. And initially I gave it a 7 because I didn't like the asterisk was the new Avengers. 'Cause I was like, I don't like that twist, but I like your take on it. And I think you're right. Yeah. So I decided to throw my take of that out and bump it up to an 8. I do like this emotional climax. I like the way that it ties in with what the movie wanted to be about from the jump. And I think that it's a much better version of this than anything else I think we've seen in the MCU. I think it's pretty strong. I knock points off of the ending for just kind of maybe the post-credit sequences and stuff that happens after that, where I just kind of go like, okay, I'm still left with this like, what now with this team and who are they? They didn't really demonstrate a strength that I don't know. But maybe I could go up to, who knows? Maybe I could go up higher, but how about rewatchability?
Rewatchability, I did a 7. I am a little worried that as I rewatch it, those little things might bug me a little bit more, but it's definitely, there's a lot of fun sequences.
Yeah.
And I think you could definitely rewatch it and enjoy it a lot. And hopefully the theme comes through more, you know, and that kind of can live on. So I gave it a 7.
Yeah, I gave it a 7 as well on rewatchability. And this is my first movie in the Marvel world that I've wanted to see. Like, I actually have the feeling that like I might go see this again before it leaves theaters.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I've felt that way about a Marvel movie for a long time, where I'm like, I might go give this another watch before it's out of cinemas, because there's a lot here to look at and to kind of pay attention to. So I think that there would be a lot of things that might jump out to me on a rewatch.
Yeah.
Cultural impact.
I did a 7.5. I don't know if I can do an 8, but I think that it did really well in gaining more interest in the MCU, or bringing some more interest back. And I think it's also a really well-structured film. And there's a lot of really good craft in this film. So I think it will live on that way. But I just, you know, we'll see how it goes in the long run.
Yeah, I'm at a 7 as well. Or you're a 7.5. I'm at a 7. Because again, I don't really know. I think right now it is sort of a nice, like, it feels like every year Marvel has like one movie that's kind of like, okay, that's pretty good. And I think that's like, that's going to be this one where people kind of go, oh, that feels like maybe something that we can put some stock into, put some faith into. Last year, maybe it was Deadpool and Wolverine. Yeah. And this year, maybe it's this one, but we'll see how Fantastic Four does. Maybe they'll get on a roll here.
Maybe.
Subjective score.
My subjective score is an 8. I really had a lot of fun. It was, and the payoff of the story was really good. And it overcame a lot of those, you know, nitpicks or things that are kind of annoying.
Yeah. Mine was 7.5, and same thing. Like, I really enjoyed this movie. I was surprised, even though I thought I expected to enjoy this movie, and I was surprised still at how much I liked it and how much it worked for me in the moment. Later on, the more I thought about it, the more I was like, oh boy, there is a lot of stuff in there that's pretty silly. Yeah, yeah. But that's always going to be the case with these kinds of films. I was just happy that the filmmakers seemed like they were allowed to just focus on making a good movie, and they did.
Yes.
That.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, cool. What did you think about Thunderbolts? Asterisk, let us know in the comments. What do you think is coming up next for the Fantastic Four? Give us your predictions. And speaking of what's coming up next week, we're going to kind of do a little Tom Cruise run here going into the release of The Final Reckoning, of Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. So next week, we're going to go back in time and watch Minority Report. Minority Report, Steven Spielberg, Tom Cruise, a classic. And then we'll probably do Mission Impossible 3 after that and keep it rolling. We're just going to be on a Tom Cruise train.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Tom Trilogy. Cruise.
Tom Cruise. Oh, I like that. Yeah. Tom Cruise.
3 weeks in a row leading up to Dead Reckoning or Final Reckoning. And so if you want to watch along with us, watch Minority Report this week and then you can follow along.
Yeah.
So we'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
You say the final line.